interrupt your program to bring you this important podcast. How to 911.
Can you put me out of service on a podcast, please?
Hi, welcome back, everybody, to How To 911. I'm Sammy.
I'm Erica.
And we have another special guest. This is our in-house full-time psychologist here for the police department. We'll talk a little bit more about everything that she does, but welcome. Introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you. I'm Teresa Richards. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for our agency.
All right. So I'm the psychologist, and I split my time here between the police department and the fire department, Love and Fire. So I do lots of things. I do therapy, I do training, I supervise our peer support team here. I see anybody that needs to be seen, anybody that works here, as well as like their immediate family members are all eligible to see me.
Yeah.
Nice.
What brought you to this area and this agency?
So I've been here for like 8 years. So it was a while ago, almost exactly like 8 years ago now. Mm-hmm. But I started here as an independent contractor and didn't move into full-time until just this year. So I was working overseas with Doctors Without Borders, and looking, I was in Houston, Texas when I wasn't there. And so we knew we kind of wanted to move away from there, and we always liked visiting here. So we were kind of looking at, would we actually like living in Colorado?
Right.
So I had applied when I was working in Myanmar, didn't ever hear anything and totally forgot it. About it, that it even existed. And I'd been back in the US for about like maybe 2 days and got a call saying like, can you fly out here Friday? And I said, sure. And then like on Monday they called and said, you know, thumbs up, you got it. So, and literally we moved to Colorado like that next week and everything kind of clicked into place, and 8 years later we're still here, and
that's good.
Yeah,
that's fast.
Yeah. it was not fast after applying, but then once things kind of hit in motion, it did.
That's crazy.
And then you have the like, well, we picked you, but backgrounds are going to take like 5 months kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I was here but not really here yet, still for a few months of that transition period. So
so tell us a little bit about the difference between working with the police department and then working with the fire department, because I feel like it's like two completely different worlds.
They overlap on a lot of calls that are, you know, that they go on. A lot of the critical incidents and stuff like that tend to be the same, but there are a lot of differences in police and fire, especially the last couple of years. I would say those differences are even highlighted even more. The stress in policing those last couple of years versus that part from fire hasn't really changed any. They still do what they do, and those stresses haven't necessarily changed very much for them versus policing the last couple of years, and the stress on that has been enormous. So, I mean, there were already plenty of differences, of course, between firefighters and police officers.
Right.
If you ask any of them, they'll highlight the other one. but I would say these last couple of years, that's been one of the biggest things, right? Is how the community views police versus fire, how they're treated, the difference in legalities and things that are put on them, which just increases that stress in general. So that's been a major difference the last couple of years, I would say, for sure.
Do you have to approach officers differently than firefighters?
In what way?
When they're in a session, like, do you have to like think of a different way to approach how to get officers to open up versus firefighters? Or is it because they're in your office, they're like willing to open up?
It depends who they are. I would say that's person by person, probably a lot more than firefighters versus police officers.
Gotcha.
I think, honestly, it tends to be even easier for a lot of my police officers because I'm in here. My office is in here. They know me. They see me often. So not for everybody. There are some people who just are not real open to the process in general. And that's not going to change. But I think in general, like that stigma piece of it, of coming into my office or talking to me, is probably still quite a bit less in the police department still than it is the fire department. But the police department has also had a psychologist and peer support for decades versus fire had nothing until I came 8 years ago and started those programs. So
interesting.
Police has got a head start as well on some of that stigma piece of it.
That's cool. I guess to back up a little bit, do you have any specific counseling, I don't know what they're called, tools that you're like certified in, if that's the right term, like EMDR?
Mm-hmm. So I do EMDR here. So you go through kind of different types of trainings, different levels of things with it. So I've done kind of the EMDR basic training stuff, and I do that here in the office. And then other counseling stuff is just going to be the, you know, everything you learn in school and practice and everything like that. So I was, my tracks are with trauma, I've always worked in trauma, but up until I came here, my work had always been focused on like with the trauma victims. So I worked with the people that directly were impacted by trauma, whether that was abuse or, you know, war or refugees or those types of things, but working with them directly. Mm-hmm. So when I moved here, it's still using trauma, but it's like a level removed. I'm working with you all who are working directly with the victims, but I have kind of that level of separation there. But still all trauma related for the most part. And then of course people come in for all kinds of things that are not trauma related, but almost everything is trauma tainted, at least because that's what you guys work with. That's what you do.
Right. So. Yeah. Can you just explain what EMDR is for those who might be listening and don't know? Cause I mean, I'm sure it's like a lot more popular than it was. And I think it's up and coming. Well, not up and coming. It's probably past that, but it's very popular. It's brand new. I'm sure you've never heard of it before.
Most people haven't heard of it before. I ask most people when they're in here. And really, I mean, why would you, unless you've either gone through it yourself or you're a clinician that does it, why would you know much about it? So it is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it's strange and weird. And it's one of those things, we don't really know why it works or really how it works the way it does. We just know it does work. So it's called eye movement because it initially started with, somebody who noticed the eye movement side to side seemed to be helping. As research started into it and kept moving along, they realized it wasn't just the eye movements as it was like bilateral stimulation, the side to side. So it could be eye movements. I could do it with tapping. I could do it with audio sounds like earphones that give you kind of the audio cues. Most often I use these little, paddles. Makes it, people think they're going to get shocked. You don't get shocked. I don't do shock treatment, but they vibrate like back and forth. And so if you were to have like a brain scan going, when those things happen, you would see like that amygdala kind of light up, and that's that emotional processing part of your brain. So things like fear, things like trauma, that's where that lies. So sometimes you go through a rough incident, and most of the time for you guys, it just kind of blows over and no big deal and you go back to normal. But sometimes you'll get one of those that just really feels kind of stuck. You keep seeing images, you keep hearing certain images, those things kind of keep showing up for you and being a bit persistent and intrusive when you're not meaning them to. So we kind of call that where it gets kind of stuck. So EMDR is what we do to basically unstick it. We reprocess that memory so it can get filed away where it needs to go, and you don't have all that emotional reactivity to it anymore. It's weird. But it works.
It does work. We've talked about it on here before. I've had PTSD. Dr. T did help me with EMDR, and it definitely does work. And then those paddles are almost like your cell phone vibrating, like when it's ringing, and it's just, so it's like back and forth. Yeah.
Not shocking.
Definitely not shocking, but it does work. And I think I only had a couple sessions, but it's amazing how even talking about it and like going through it just a couple of times with that was so helpful. And
it can be very intense for some people, which is uncomfortable, mm-hmm. I think, for a lot of people, because it tends to just kind of flood the emotions up to the top. Mm-hmm. And a lot of first responders aren't big fans of having emotion flooding up to the surface.
Right.
However, if it was, especially if it's an incident that just happened in the last like month or so, a pretty recent traumatic event, we can usually get that out of there in like one, maybe two sessions, mm-hmm. To where you'll still remember everything, but you don't have all of that emotional upset that comes along with it, which is a nice feeling.
Yeah.
But it is a bit intense. And for some, that makes that uncomfortable during, but you kind of have to go through mm-hmm. that rough stuff to get to that other side where you don't have any of that rough feeling with it anymore.
Yeah. I like it too, because it helped me then process other things
mm-hmm.
Later on. Like, I can tell when I'm getting upset quicker and easier now, and where I'm able to leave the center and be like, I need to go and deal with this. Like, I remember one time, maybe a couple years now, where I had to leave and go cry in the stairwell. And I did. And I was like, why am I sad? What's going on now? What is making me feel like this right now? Don't not feel like that. Like, if I accept it and hold on to it and like honor it, then I can let it go easier. Mm-hmm. And it was super sad. It still is. But having just processed it that way and talking myself through it, much easier, because I think that it could have been something that I thought about. There's nothing I could have done, obviously. It's just the sadness of the moment, but mm-hmm. definitely like something that I still use.
Yeah. And it's so much easier when you're doing it with an event mm-hmm. rather than, hey, I'm coming in for 25 mm-hmm. years of cumulative trauma. I've probably got, 55 to 60 calls stuffed in here that I never dealt with and I never processed. I still want you to come, but that's so much more difficult and time consuming than, hey, we had this really rough one a couple of weeks ago. It's still bothering me. Let's just make sure that's cleared out. So that's one of the things I tell the new firefighters, new police officers, especially, is like, deal with them as they come mm-hmm. so that they don't build up, you guys have to compartmentalize. That's part of your job, right? You can't go cry in the stairwell in the middle of a call,
right?
Like, you have to be able to hold that together. You have to shove the emotion away somewhere so that you can do your job. Officers, firefighters that are out there on the scene have to do the same thing, right? They're not going to break down in front of everybody else. They mm-hmm. need to do their job. But what happens a lot of them is they shove it all in this box, and then they don't ever take it back out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just keep shoving things in their box. But problem is, the box does not expand. It does not keep getting bigger the more stuff you put in it, right? Like, eventually that gets full
mm-hmm.
and it's going to start coming out. It either starts leaking out into your relationships, into your mood, into I hate being here, all of those things, right? Because this box is here and it just is full to the brim. So again, trying to like, yes, put it in your box because you have to do your job, but also like, where is a safe place where you can take that back out, make sure it's dealt with and move on so that you're not just carrying this big box full of stuff with you everywhere you go.
Right.
So, and the other nice thing with EMDR is you don't actually have to talk during it at all. So if you don't really want to talk about it, as long as you're willing to bring it up in your head and access that memory, we can still do it.
Nice.
So, because sometimes it feels huge. And that emotional stuff, like, I don't even feel like I can talk about that or bring that up. So I do like to let people know that too, is you have to be willing to go there in your head, but you don't actually have to use any words, period, if you don't want to.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's a good point. Cause I think people are like, that's a fear of theirs. Mm-hmm. It's like having to explain it. And it's like, I can't explain, or I don't know how,
right.
So I'm glad that you made that point, because I think that's another stigma or misconception of therapy or getting help in general. Do you think that with telling officers and firefighters or anybody in general that's listening, that seeking help when you notice something is bothering you and trying to process it before you have a full box, do you think that that's going to help lead to longevity in their career?
Absolutely. And to where it's your choice.
Yeah.
Right. Not to where I'm not functioning anymore. My marriage is falling apart. I don't want to be here. I can't do any of this. And now I either got to get help or I got to go, right? And I have to leave. So absolutely, it should be, again, like some people will say, well, I'm not like curled up in a ball in the corner, so I'm not there yet. Good. I don't want you to get there at all, right? I don't want you to ever be there. That's the whole point, is like similar to in relationships, right? Like people make the mistake of not coming in for couples counseling until like they're on that divorce, like divorce is right there.
Right.
And it's been thrown at the other person of like, we either do this or I'm out. Okay. Problems started long before that. Like start with maintenance stuff or start coming in, you know, when there's some things that, you know, could be better or that we can be improving on, just as a maintenance thing versus we're falling apart and this is a last ditch effort that we can say we did. Same thing with people individually and their mental health, right? It would be great to not have to never see her face until like you call me and you're going to, you know, say I'm going to kill myself, or, you know, your spouse says they won't get out of bed and they, you know, can't come in and they literally are curled up in the corner, right? That's frustrating because there are so many opportunities well before that for you to get help so that you don't ever end up in that position in the first place. You know, deal with it when it's just some anxiety, some trauma symptoms, or some depressed stuff, or you're just awful to be around and you're super cranky and irritable. And, you know, those things, that's when you want to come and be like, okay, not my best version of myself right now. Is there anything we can do to help before it leads to all of these other much bigger problems?
Yeah.
That's the ideal. For some, that's easier than others to make that step, but that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah. So what's your favorite part about this job?
I love my job. Yeah. Like I'm super fortunate. Like I know everybody else doesn't love their job. And especially right now, a lot of people's jobs are really rough, but I love the people I work with. I think I do well with like the first responders and a lot of that. I work well with trauma and crisis. That's kind of my niche. So when everything else kind of starts hitting the fan, I feel like is when I'm at my best. Which I think is a lot of first responders as well. So I think it fits in well with that. I love that I already get to know most of these people before big stuff happens. I think that makes it a lot easier for them to trust me to help them through a lot of that garbage. And a lot of the stuff when things are really hard or when we have shootings or when we have some other really hard things. There's a lot of people, it is not easy to come in and not easy to talk about those things. So like, that's a major privilege and an honor that they're going to trust me, to actually open up to me and to actually let me help them through that stuff. So in the same way, I think a lot of the stuff, you know, when I talk to like the detectives and the people who work, you know, child crimes and things like that, it's the same kind of thing in that I hate that those things have already happened, but they've already happened and there's nothing we can do to change the fact that these things happen to people. But I love that I get to be a part of helping. I get to be a part of people not feeling so awful or helpless or any of that part of it. So I very much enjoy this job.
Good. So let's talk about the opposite.
Yeah.
What's your least favorite part about this job?
I would say a couple of things. One, I think the same thing as most people, kid calls, always extra difficult, or just some of them that are kind of extra disturbing, the kind you can't really kind of shake when you leave, even though you'd like to leave everything here. Sometimes you get those that just, that general uneasy feeling that kind of will stick around sometimes or mess with you when you sleep. Same kinds of things I think as a lot of you guys deal with. And then, of course, like seeing people who are really struggling with their job or when people are leaving and those kinds of things. And you know them as a great person and as a wonderful person. And it's kind of sad to see them unhappy and going as well. It's interesting because all other jobs that I've had, you have very clear lines. You have, you know, your patient and you have your, you know, me, Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even in ethics, you have what they call, like, you know, trying to avoid dual roles or multiple roles. It's impossible in this job right. to do that, because sometimes I'm your psychologist, sometimes I'm your clinical supervisor, sometimes I'm your coworker, sometimes, you know, it, yeah. there's so many different roles that people play in here. So on the plus side, like, I love that I get to know people so much more, but also it's not just you come in my office and I don't ever see your face again until you're back in my office in that role. So it can make things just a little bit more, I don't know, not usually sticky, but it's just different
right.
than in most other roles where you have an office out there, somebody comes in and that's the only time you see them, and then they go back out. So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
But I also think that helps me in this role many other times.
Right. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you, this is how to 911, we have to mm-hmm. bring it back to dispatch,
yeah.
but what do you think that we do well for our center specifically?
What do I think you guys do well?
Yeah.
You know your dispatch way more than me. I think even things like this, bringing awareness to it, being able to talk about mental health topics, mm-hmm. Which hopefully spreads to everybody else. You know, you guys have, you know, try to make sure when new people are coming in that they also meet with me, that we try and give them as much support
right.
as we can, mm-hmm. you know, going through your all's training program. I don't know how anybody does it. Like, it's a lot. It's
yeah.
a lot of information.
Yeah.
It's really long. And those expectations of, like, the no mistakes, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mess up, it could kill somebody. Like, holy cow, that's a lot of
pressure.
That's mm-hmm. a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And honestly, like, not super realistic to not make a mistake when you're
right.
just learning. So I think you guys do a good job of making sure there's, you know, that support system in place, that they know we get, you know, kind of get people plugged in with peer support as well through that beginning piece. So I think all of those things are good. You guys have your little things on the walls sometimes with some of the positive things that you
yeah.
do. And I like highlighting the positive. I know that can have pluses and minuses for you guys sometimes too, but I, in general, like, it's nice to pay attention also to the good stuff and not just what went wrong when things didn't go well, dissecting those, but making sure that people are also, like, putting into their memory all of the good things too
yeah.
that you guys do. Cause sometimes you blow straight past those when
mm-hmm.
it comes to your, what you put into your memory, and you go
yeah.
straight to all the things that didn't go well.
Right.
I think you guys do those. As far as your actual job and what you do well, I could not, I don't know anything about your technicalities of your job and stuff
yeah.
other than, you know, I think also, like, you guys have had, when we talk about, like, the difficulties in the last couple of years for policing, that has absolutely made your all's job a million times harder too. You're dealing with really difficult people who are calling in, people who are calling you guys awful names,
mm-hmm.
who are taking, you have nothing to do with what happened, but yet you're taking the brunt of a lot of that stuff, which is really hard. Like, people can laugh that off sometimes.
Right.
But then also other times, like, getting treated like that, you normally would never be treated like that.
Right.
You would not ever stand to be treated like that, or to be called those names, or to have people speak to you in that way. And you have to do it, and you have to listen, and you have to make sure there's no emergency and all of those things, which is, it just adds to an already sometimes difficult and stressful job that you have.
Yeah.
So I think you guys have handled that amazingly well, and way, way better than most people would if somebody spoke to them ever like that.
Thank you.
On the phone or otherwise.
Yeah. Thank you. So what can we improve on?
Again, I can't talk anything about what you actually do for your job, because I wouldn't know what you can improve on or not.
Yeah.
But I think there are those parts that are hard about when people are in there and needing that support, like, especially the brand new people and the people who are in training, that pressure piece of things. Like, yes, you have to learn to do your job, and it's important to do it fast and stuff, but there is also, like, there's a learning curve, like,
right.
and you've got the people there. And sometimes, if people are good at managing their anxiety and their stress and recognizing that, great. But I think some people may not have those tools yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, making sure that people have got some good tools to deal with kind of some of that stress and that anxiety of that
right.
job, and multitasking. I don't know how you guys do all the billion things you do all at once.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot, you know? So I would say that, maybe, but I definitely could not tell you guys how to do your job.
Well, that's part of our job, you know, like that's a different aspect of it. So
yeah,
that's good.
Definitely. You guys have also been incredibly short staffed again. And trying to deal with like a massive amount of overtime and picking all of these other things up. And I think that makes it really hard. Like, how do you balance? Right. Cause we push and we talk so much about like your home life and work life balance and making sure you have a good life outside of work. So this isn't just who you are, you know, it's what you do, but it's not who you are and how to do that. But that's really hard if like you're having to pick up a million hours of overtime and you're having have to have your phone on you at all times and you might get called out. And part of that is just, you know, your job, but also it's gotta be crazy difficult. How do you have that balance, you know?
It's definitely a
lot of that outside of your control. As much of it as you can control, you know, within your control too.
It's a fun balancing act, I think.
Definitely.
So is there anything that you want to, if we haven't talked about, just let the public know about what your job is and I don't know, just education for free.
No, I mean, I'm not sure which public is listening, right? We have different messages for different members of the public. But just in general, you know, I mean, the humanizing aspect of it again, like all of you guys and the first responders in general, like whether it's the police officers, the firefighters, I think firefighters in general are seen as very human. Police officers are seen as very much not and treated as such. And so I think just remembering in the same way that we want police officers to use empathy and compassion and all of those things, that goes for the other side too. Like they have families, they have lives, they have emotions, all of those kind of things as well. You guys, when you're on the other end of the phone, it is not your fault, whatever is happening, right? And people just trying to use more empathy and compassion in general, all the way across the board would be very helpful. Especially when we're, you know, with you guys, there's a huge amount of that compassion fatigue in place right now, like a massive amount of compassion fatigue in place right now and burnout. And so it's almost like you need even more to help fill that plate that is already very empty for a lot of people.
Thank you. Anything else, Erica?
That's it.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening. You can email us with any questions you have for ourselves or Dr. Richards at howto911@cityofloveland.org. I don't say that enough, apparently. and then you can follow us on social media at Facebook, Loveland Emergency Communications Center, and then Instagram is howto911podcast. And that's it. Until next time, know where you are, know your phone number, and tell us exactly what happened.